Hello everyone, I'm Mike McDermott.
And I'm Sean O'Hare.
With WRPR News. It wasn't until the late 1970s that video games began to rise to prominence, but it dates as far back as 1947, when Thomas Goldsmith Jr. and S. Ray Mann filed a United States patent request for an invention they described as a cathode ray tube amusement device.
Since then, video games have evolved from the bulky arcade-style time killers of the 1970s to the virtual reality-type consoles that have become prevalent in today's society. What started as a hobby has grown into a multi-billion dollar per year industry that has sprouted its own specific subculture that is universally recognized around the globe. We asked two students, Kyle Mack and Matthew Crum, if they could share a bit of nostalgia, telling us about their gaming life and how long they've been gaming for.
So that'd probably be about 12 years, 11 or 12 years.
It's like 11 to 12 years like total, and that was just with the PlayStation 2, or did you go to other consoles after that then?
I eventually moved up. I actually went straight to Xbox 360 after that.
Probably since I was like 4 or 5.
What's the first console you ever had?
It was actually a PS2. I was a little bit of a late bloomer, I guess, in the video game market.
Super Nintendo. It was old school.
Both Kyle and Matthew are avid gamers who remain true to their original love towards video games, both for the enjoyment factor and the thrill of being entertained by a virtual world delivered by these consoles. What consoles do you currently own?
I only own an Xbox 360 now. I got rid of my PS2 a long time ago.
Xbox 360, Xbox, and N64.
What role does gaming play in your life?
I do it for stress relief, to hang out with friends. I enjoy just hanging around, having four people play together, social aspect.
Mostly it's just stress relief. I have a little bit of free time, and it just helps me get my mind off of stuff.
Kyle and Matthew are just two examples of what makes up the average gamer. 68% of American households play either computer or console games, where it's said the average age of these gamers are 30 years old. Kyle and Matthew, however, are just two of what makes up an average of 300 million plus gamers worldwide. Mentioning online multiplayer games, this gives the gamer an experience to interact and connect with gamers worldwide, with the use of Xbox Live, PlayStation Network, or any online-ready PC title. We asked Kyle and Matthew about their favorite genres and tied that into their experience with online gaming.
Now, how would you describe the growth of video games with the emergence of online gaming?
I think it's pretty cool to be able to play with other people that are not in the same room. I enjoy just hanging out with me and a buddy and being able to play with friends back home. So, you know, I'm from New Jersey, he's from PA, so it's nice to be able to play half with his friends, half with my friends.
So you say it's more like the social aspect of, you know, pretty much like it brings everyone together?
Yeah, it really does bring people together because, you know, I won't talk with my, you know, some of my old high school buddies all that much, but over, you know, Xbox Live, you can just chat and just catch up a little bit.
Yeah, it's really brought a lot of the gaming community together, and also because of computers, there's been a lot of advances in, like, graphics and, like, just in general, there's been a lot of advances that have been able to be made since games have been starting to move to PC.
We caught up with Steven Jablonski, a professor at Ramapo College who teaches a course called Interactive Animation Design, to obtain his point of view on the advancements of gaming due to online play.
What I like about the gaming is there is this interesting social aspect to gaming.
You know, especially like all the online gaming.
All the online gaming and play, you know, you've got your headset on and you're talking smack to your friend as you're chasing after him. Like I think there's a lot of value in that. Because you're still social, you're still engaging in this world, but you're tapping into this screen from different locations.
Microsoft's latest console, the Xbox 360, was released in 2005, and Sony's PlayStation 3 in 2006. But with upcoming rumors spreading amongst the gaming community of a new Xbox console, the Xbox 720, and an official announcing of the PlayStation 4, some gamers seem skeptical about adding a new addition to their already expansive collection.
There's a PS4 coming out
soon.
You know, what kind of computing power do you have to keep? How do you keep adding to it? Short of being total virtual reality environment, it's just going to be faster, it's going to be smoother graphics, it's going to be more detail. And I think that's always going to be pleasurable, you know, with big screens, HD, all this kind of stuff, quality. I don't know that it actually makes the game play any better.
It seems as though some gamers concur with Professor Jablonski's sentiment, as we ask Kyle and Matthew to comment on the upcoming releases of Xbox 720 and PlayStation 4.
I definitely will not be purchasing one, really just because I feel like, you know, to shell out an extra or another $400 or so, knowing that upon like Xbox Live type service or upon buying new video games and new controllers and all that stuff, it just seems like so much of a, you know, so much of a high budget item when I could easily put that money towards something else that's more universal. Like I said, building another computer.
I was originally really excited, but I've heard some things that are a little bit ridiculous. Like when you get a game, it has like a special code in it, so you can only play it on one console. Which the whole point of games to me is for stress relief, to like hang out with my friends and do something. So if I can't bring a game over to my friend's house, then it's not much use to me.
There is, however, the question of digital production of video game titles, which may incorporate an anti-piracy software implementation of digital rights management known as DRM. DRM is something gamers do not accept with arms wide open, as it puts a constraint on these titles. Having an online-only accessibility option that is mandatory will force gamers to have their consoles connected to the internet at all times, so that the DRM can confirm this title is a digital purchase. Doing so will lock this title into the console it is being played on, ultimately making it impossible to play on someone else's console. If friends want to hang out and game together, the console must be brought along as well as the game.
I personally think that's a crappy business model, and I think there's, I think it's going to be backlash on that, and I hope they don't pursue that thing, because I think it could be the nail in the coffin for some things.
Yeah.
Because people try games, and I know for my own self, I mean, I'll use record collecting as an example. When I would go record collecting with friends, I couldn't buy every record I wanted to buy. I didn't have enough money. Mm. So I bought some, and my friend bought some, and then we shared records so we could listen to more music. And I see the same thing happening with video games.
Controversy is rising amongst gamers concerning this potential DRM policy by gaming companies, which begs the question as to whether the gaming industry is heading in the right direction.
Not really. I'm actually toying with the idea of leaving the console genre, or leaving consoles altogether and building a PC, really for the sole purpose of getting more for my money. I feel like with the new ideas that they're throwing around with all this right protection and things like that, I can't buy used games anymore. I couldn't borrow one from a buddy. Like, it just seems so much of a marketing scam. Like, I rarely buy games, and I rarely buy new games. So I don't think that, you know, right protecting every single game is gonna, you know, boost the amount of people that are purchasing games at that point.
Yes and no. I think it is in some cases, but in other cases, like personally with like Call of Duty, some companies are just going, oh, well, this sells, and we know since we're marketing to a younger audience, they'll just buy whatever we put out, whereas other companies are trying to put out quality games. So
like, what you're saying is they're really sticking to like one genre, just kind of to generate the revenue instead of going to branch out into different things?
Yeah, exactly. Like, personally, I think all the Call of Duty games are exactly the same, just with a different name.
With gaming revenues at an all-time high, it seems as though the sky's the limit for this industry, but only time will tell how far this culture and its virtually immersed participants will take it. For WRPR News, I'm Sean O'Hare.
And I'm Michael McDermott.